bisexuality.
Bisexual.
I'm bisexual.
Bisexual.
Triple bypass.
Bisexual.
Bisexual.
Bisexuality.
I'm bisexual.
Bisexuality.
The best of both worlds.
Triple bypass.
Triple bypass.
Triple bypass on Joy 94.9.
Triple Bypass acknowledges that we broadcast from the lands of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation. We pay our respects to elders past, present and emerging, and to any Aboriginal or Torres Strait Islander people who are listening today. We acknowledge that this land was never ceded, no treaty was ever signed, and that it always was and always will be Aboriginal land.
For this episode of Triple Bypass, we'll be hearing from two amazing humans who, aside from being tireless queer rights campaigners, are now qualified queer wedding celebrants. We're going to hear about their journeys with marriage equality in this country, with studying celebrancy and the joy that marrying queers brings them. It's also 3 years since the Yes vote in Australia, so Ruby and I reflect on the marriage law postal survey, the Yes campaign and community building during this tricky time. We also have some goss on a new podcast about the experiences of queer, trans and intersex people of colour during the marriage equality campaign. All this and more coming up on the show that puts the B in LGBTIQA+, Triple Bypass on Joy 94.9. But first, some community messages and a song picked by one of our guests. Each week we ask our guests to pick a song, and this one has been popular in doing the rounds lately. This is Don't You Worry by Electric Fields, and you're on Triple Bypass on Joy 94.9. That was Don't You Worry by Electric Fields, and you're back on Triple Bypass, the show that puts the B in LGBTIQA+. We throw in a P for pansexual, a Q for queer, and an E for everybody else. We are not gatekeeping queers. Hey, Rubes.
No, never. I hate gates. I'm allergic to gates. I have a gate allergy.
I'll try and find an antihistamine for you for that one, babe.
This is EpiPen level allergy.
EpiPen.
I really don't like gates. I have to, you know, if you've been touching gates, I have to know, because it can get on your fingers and the dust can. No, I shouldn't. No, I'm not allergic, but I don't like them.
I respect that, babe. I'm Amelia.
I'm Ruby.
My gremlin co-host. And we are here this week to hear and reflect upon the 3 years since the Yes vote and the marriage law postal survey, the Yes campaigning that a lot of our community was involved in, and just reflecting on what the past 3 years has looked like since that horrific but at the same time, you know, great step forward for queer rights in this country. Rubes, I was wondering if you'd be so kind as to share some of your reflections on the campaign around the Yes vote, because you were really involved in the media space and campaigning in that time, weren't you?
Well, yeah, it was 3 years. Wow.
I know. I can't believe it. I only thought it was two, but apparently it's three.
Yeah, there you go. It's pretty interesting because I had just started at Joy about a year before we got to that point. And so beforehand, a lot of the news, by that point, it was really dominating the news. So we on the show The Informer, which is like a half-hour current affairs program.
Mm-hmm. That's on Joy.
On Joy. Yeah. And I think it still is now, I think, once a week. But this was – and but this was like a – so I'd go into the studio for about 6 hours on Tuesdays and just like gather up all the news. And there was so much about – when will the government finally make a call on marriage equality? How much is it going to cost them? And like, you know, to the point where it was getting at times exhausting. And then, you know, there was the final push to have a plebiscite, which would have been like a compulsory non-binding vote. And then that got shut down in the Senate after we commissioned research in Ireland. So there was all this information I was constantly processing about it. Like I just knew a lot of minute details that, and I was just, that was still when I was kind of getting in touch with community at all. Like that was, Joy was kind of how I'd decided to try and re-enter and just make some connections and understand this space a bit more.
For sure.
And so it was pretty incredible. Like Joy had a bomb threat during that time.
Oh, that's right. I remember.
Yeah. And Triple Bypass was like the first show to go on air afterwards. And and there was just a lot of kind of really building up. And then, so then when it actually started again, there was just kind of just righteous fury at how underhanded the way it was done as well. Like for listeners who weren't, who aren't in Australia or weren't like really following it really closely, basically to try and avoid it becoming like a party issue. So one that at the next election, one party could kind of use it to hit the other one over the head. In this case, the Labor Party saying would get it done in 100 days after the next election if they haven't sorted this stuff out yet, because public opinion was overwhelmingly supporting it.
For sure.
And then they managed to pull this really sneaky trick of making it like a voluntary postal survey. So
Liberal government?
The Liberal government, yeah. And Peter Dutton actually orchestrated it. The guy is now head of our border security and our really horrifying immigration policies, which makes sense. But yeah, it was a really just a, they basically found conditions to make it as least likely as possible. And I think I knew that. And that was a thing. I'd spent so much time learning about all the effects of that, how the plebiscite worked, and having to really break down exactly what was legally happening, that I just knew it was just a shoddy thing to do.
For sure. And that even if overwhelmingly positive results were received, or like the reflection that people were in favour, it was non-binding, right?
Exactly. But I think what also changed was, like, you know, I learned so much about it, but I also just saw the people. And it was like, it was a small number of people who were running the kind of campaign machines, basically.
Yeah.
And I just saw like just the kind of, like just the grit and determination to stay extremely positive and forward facing things.
Yeah.
And I just also just saw like the people who've been, you know, who had been doing this fight for decades.
Yes.
And, it felt like such a huge privilege to get to see that as well, and to kind of really get to interview people over the course of the years that, like, I, you know, had been basically building to this moment and getting everything ready and ready to go and ready to launch, and were just being, just refusing to acknowledge, and just even when, you know, we'd interview people for the radio, and then afterwards when we were just chatting as community, there'd just be that kind of sense of like, oh yeah, look, it's a bit rough, but the effort, Joy, and everyone at Joy, and everyone was just putting into trying to keep spirits up and trying to keep people motivated and engaged.
Yeah.
It just felt like, you know, I felt like I was a part of something. And I think that's kind of, that was where I got hooked.
Yes, that's where your community action began.
Yeah. And like, you know, the day where they announced the results, it was like, happiest days of my life. I was furious and I was relieved. But looking back, it was just one of those days of just the intense like euphoria of relief even then just really stands out. And well, you were getting in pretty involved in community stuff around that time too, hey? Like or for a little while beforehand.
Yeah, I was. I at the time, well, I'm still with Switchboard as a volunteer, but at the time I was a volunteer on the phones and was also involved in the training aspects. So we had some new some fast tracked phone counsellors come through because of the
Switchboard, the LGBTIQ helper.
Correct, yeah. So Switchboard's an LGBTIQ organisation that is one of the partners in QLife, which is the national LGBTIQA+ peer support service. So I was one of the volunteers there, and we had to train up some new phone volunteers because the demand for the QLife service nationally just skyrocketed during that time.
Yeah.
As I'm sure this isn't brand new information, Joe Ball, the ever passionate CEO, has spoken about this a lot. And I remember, you know, going along to the vote announcement, results announcement, celebrating with everyone. You know, because I'm me, I took a bum bag of glitter and face paints up to to one of the local bars and was just made an impromptu glitter face station, which was real fun.
I love that.
It was gorgeous. I should show you photos one time. but yeah, and then, you know, had a few drinks in the sun with my friends, celebrated. Yeah. But then I had actually signed on for a phone volunteering shift afterwards.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, after, you know, I'd had some food and, you know, had a bit of a walk around and, you know, had time to myself. So later that evening, I then went and did a phone chat. And I just remember feeling like, I thought I'd feel better. Like I really wanted to be there for community. Like, I think it was beautiful to celebrate at the time. And then when I was kind of walking around just by myself reflecting, I honestly thought I should feel better than I did. Mm. And so I was really grateful for those spaces like, you know, Joy and some of the other community orgs who were really focusing, as you say, on that morale building and that remaining positive during what was actually a really, really tough time for our community, because I saw a lot of the, and I'm not saying that anyone else didn't, like a lot of folks saw the hurt and the pain it caused our community. But I think when you're hearing it in a counselling kind of position or in a mental health position, or, you know, having those kind of positive voices and that positive spirit and community building and morale building is so, so important, because it can feel really, I guess, if all you're hearing is challenging things, it can be really, really important to counter that with positivity and resilience building. And, you know, it was so wonderful that so many orgs and communities, not, you know, irrespective of specific organizations, just really banded together to support each other in that time.
Yeah, though it was interesting because I was saying we were being positive. I also, there are times during Triple Bypass where we would just be like, hey, folks, can you not call it gay and lesbian marriage all the time?
Or, yes.
Hey, so there are other letters after the L and the G.
Yes.
And I think that was, it was interesting to have that space to kind of air those frustrations as well, because there was that kind of almost, it felt that you couldn't speak out about the anger and the frustration because there just wasn't, it wasn't safe enough to risk anything. It's like, you know, there was that sense, oh, you can't yell down anyone who's just like, I don't get why it's a big deal. Just be like, you don't understand. Or like, you know, when someone's like, I don't think I'm really going to vote. I'm like, I can't yell at you because then all the queers are angry people and you won't help
us. Exactly.
And so even though I was kind of like, hey, the bi erasure and the trans erasure and like the whiteness of this campaign is not ideal, but it's also, it was so calculated. And I think that was the kind of hard thing as well, just to be like, oh, we're doing whatever we have to do to win. Like, that's what's happening.
Yeah.
The ruthless calculus of this campaign is for me, was a really interesting and kind of, it made me sad in some ways that we had to, that there was that sense of needing to resort to that because of Switchboard having more people online, because we knew that this was really,
But I'm interested that you brought up the whiteness and the, you know, kind of palatability of queerness when the Yes campaign was positioning themselves in terms of like for campaigning for a Yes vote, because Switchboard just this week actually have launched a podcast that was recorded over the past, you know, I think it was a few years actually, and coordinated by Carolyn Ridler. And it is a podcast that focuses on the queer, trans and intersex people of colour during the Marriage Law Postal Survey. And it's called When Love Wins. And each week I believe they're going to be releasing a segment or an episode that, you know, I know, it's really cool. It just popped up on my feed. I had no idea this was happening, but popped up on my feed yesterday and I was like, oh, what a delight. So that could be a really interesting thing for folks to listen to and reflect upon 3 years after the Yes vote, because there were so many voices that weren't heard during that campaign. And, you know, the voices of people of colour definitely weren't heard as loudly as, you know, the voices of white queers.
And the blaming afterwards as well about like spaces that had voted no and everything. Like we did a bit of, we did have some coverage of that too. It was just, but I think it's one of those moments, like I remember talking to a woman who now has just like won a space in like as the first like openly trans woman in one of the house seats in the US.
Come
down here. But she was saying that this vote, you know, was a huge beacon to other countries. And it was an interesting thing of remembering, you know, when Ireland passed their vote and just how that felt to watch and just be like, oh, or even when Ireland passed their referendum around abortion, just like those moments of kind of being like, oh, okay, people are making the right choice, you know. And I think right now, given the time we're talking and given everything that's been going on, it's also just interesting just to kind of remember that even when progressive, like all the progressive cause wins, you have to be constantly examining what could be done better.
You
know, it's not enough to rest there. And I think, you know, life after Yes has been a big thing happening here in Australia. Like, what do we do now? Who's jumped out of the ship now that they've got their what they wanted?
It's you know, keep the fire going.
Keep the fire burning.
Well, after this, Rubes, we're going to be listening to some interviews that I did with two folks who were quite active campaigners during the Yes campaign, during the Marriage Law Postal Survey, and who are both actually now celebrants, queer celebrants, which is gorgeous, and love
and
that.
And former guests.
I feel like we have them both on in different capacities every few months. But they're such bang-up humans. So stay tuned after this. We're going to be speaking with Renee and Naveau about their queer celebrancy work. And Renee has picked this song for us. It is called Every Rain by Little Dragon. And you're on Triple Bypass on Joy 94.9. Thanks, Rubes.
Yay.
You're back on Triple Bypass, your weekly Bisexual Plus radio takeover, and that was Every Rain by Little Dragon, chosen by one of our guests, Renee. I'm Amelia, and for our interviews this week, I'm flying solo to chat to the wonderful Renee and Naveau, two queer marriage celebrants living and working in Melbourne. They are both very cheeky buggers and special humans in my life, so buckle in for a chat about love, about weddings, queerness, campaignings, and a lot of giggles from me. We're still broadcasting to you from home, dear listeners, so whilst you can't text in, you can definitely engage with us live through our social media. You can find us at our socials on Facebook at Triple Bypass, on Instagram, Triple Bypass Joy, or email anytime at triplebypass@joy.org.au. So let me introduce you to our guests. First, the wonderful Renee. Renee has been a registered wedding celebrant for a year now, amongst other queer community endeavours. She is known as the producer of Tomboy events and currently works in communications at the Victorian Pride Centre. Renee could be seen during the campaign for marriage equality in Australia, hooning around the streets of Melbourne with her motorcycle girl gang, dressed as brides flying rainbow flags. Renee is currently planning for events in a post-COVID world and is taking wedding bookings, offering mates rates to anyone who identifies as LGBTIQ. And let's introduce Naveau. Naveau is a queer, non-binary Jewish writer, performer, activist, and public speaker based in Birrarunga or Melbourne. They run workshops in schools and professional development training in workplaces around transgender identity and language. Naveau is the author of award-winning Finding Naveau, a memoir on gender transition, and the upcoming book Pronoun Lowdown, which looks really exciting. They've recently become a marriage celebrant and are passionate about basking in queer love and crafting wonderful ceremonies for people of all genders and sexual identities. Welcome, Renee, and welcome, Naveau. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. Hi.
Oh, I was just lamenting before you joined us that it would be so much nicer to have this chat in person, because I've missed both of your faces so much. But alas, we are still recording from home. But it gives us the opportunity to chat to you both from your varying homes. So what we've been wanting to chat about today is marriage equality and the anniversary of the yes vote in Australia. And I'd love to hear from each of you what your experience with the marriage equality postal vote and that campaign was. So which of you would like to kick us off?
Renee, you go for it.
All right, doll. I'll take this one. Hi, everyone. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks, Amelia, for having me on the show. I always love to come on Triple Bypass, and I've always got something new to talk about.
That's very true, Renee.
Yeah. Well, initially, the plebiscite, I like to call it, it was a shock. It was a shock to us all because we thought the government aren't really going to make us do this, are they?
No.
And they did, you know, and it was pretty brutal. It was awful for the whole community. And, you know, the people who were resilient enough to deal with it were kind of on the front line, so to speak. And
for sure.
At the time I was working with Victorian AIDS Council, aka VAC, now known as the Thorn Harbour Health, which you would know quite well, Amelia. And so I'll talk a bit more about that in a bit. But I guess my experience of this whole thing coming up was, I don't really want to get married myself, I don't think, but having equal rights would be really nice.
For sure. Having the option should you wish to.
Yeah, that's right.
And I imagine it would be also quite relevant that, you know, your heritage as an Irish woman in Northern Ireland and the marriage equality woo-woo that was going on over there. I wonder how that translated to your experience here as well.
Yeah, I think that I felt a little bit more positive about it, knowing that if the Republic of Ireland could pass marriage equality, then Australia would be just fine. But they did it in a very different manner here, and it wasn't very respectful at all.
Bloody government. What about you, Nev? What was your movements and your experience within the marriage law postal survey way back when?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I feel quite similarly to Renee, ironically, as a marriage celebrant, not necessarily caring about getting married myself or for that being something I envision for my future as a polyamorous, you know, non-monogamous kind of queer person. It's mm-hmm. not really the hierarchy I'm looking for. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, I think as someone who came out at 15 and was really sort of involved in any kind of activism that I could be from early stages, it felt like LGBTIQA plus activism in this country was revolving around marriage equality, even though I don't think that that's true. And I think that's a really kind of whitewashed way of looking at that sort of activism. But yeah. At 15, I didn't know any better. And that's what was happening at the State Library. So I was there campaigning for it. And I certainly didn't think things would go in the direction that they did. I think that marriage is one of the most conservative institutions, and that if it was that hard for us to get that right, then it felt very concerning about all of the other really radical changes that we actually seek. But I think it was mostly how trans people and trans young people in particular got thrown under the bus through the No campaign that really piqued my interest and my passion, because I had just experienced quite a lot through the whole safe schools debacle, and I had been written about by the Australian Christian lobby personally, and that's when I started antidepressants, and it was just a lot, and so I felt like I was involved whether I kind of wanted to be or not.
For sure.
And so I guess I got into it a little bit more around that time. But I was never really campaigning for marriage equality. I was more campaigning against transphobia. And there's so many ways that not having marriage equality actually played into the transphobia in this country. I mean, for example, if you had, let's just say, for example, a trans woman who was married to another woman and they were together for 40 years happily in a marriage, if that trans woman wanted to change her gender marker legally to F, she had to get divorced in order to do that. So even if her marriage was happy and healthy and beautiful,
and very consensual and wanted.
Exactly. She couldn't continue on in that relationship the way that it was, because two women, or two Fs, if you will, wouldn't legally be allowed to be married in this country. So it was situations like that that I was really fighting for.
For sure.
It's less about marriage as being the hierarchy of relationships, which I think needs to change, but more about, if that is the case, then how can we ensure the safety of our LGBTIQA plus community within that?
And the reach beyond the legal reach of marriage and of the implications that would have on people's lives in, you know, for example, just the topic and example you just gave about having very real barriers to people being able to affirm their gender in legal and systemic ways.
Yeah, absolutely. And it was really interesting during that time and during the plebiscite as well, because there was a 40% increase in access of mental health services by young people. So this government literally had blood on their hands. You know, there was really, really high mental health needs within our community. And I think it was an interesting time because we were dealing with young people experiencing not the invisibility that maybe some of us experienced growing up or some of our older generations did, but rather a hyper-visibility.
Yes.
In which they knew exactly the numbers in this country that voted for or against their rights. They knew which neighbours were on their side. They knew which family members were on that side, in a way that maybe some of us didn't have to experience growing up. And
for
I think
sure.
that presented a whole new kind of issue.
Yeah, and there being debate on the validity and acceptability of people's identities, and that being, hypervisibility is a really great word, Nev, in terms of, you know, we didn't necessarily growing up see people that we could model ourselves after or, you know, as role models, but all of a sudden younger people were seeing sexuality and gender diverse individuals in the media having their identities debated, and that having such a negative effect on young people, but people of all ages as well, you know, all of a sudden being the token LGBTI individual who, hey, I'd love to talk to you about, what do you think that your rights are about XYZ, or I'm allowed to have an opinion now because the government has said that I do. I'm allowed to have an opinion about your identity and your rights moving forward. Renee, can we hear more about some of the work that you did in the campaigning work that you were involved in? I saw in your bio that you sent through to me that you were hooning around on the back of a motorbike or on a motorbike in a wedding dress?
Yeah,
that sounds very like you, but
yeah, absolutely. So you know, leading up to the plebiscite, there was a lot of rallies that happened and whatnot, and so I ride with a bunch of girls, I ride a motorbike with a bunch of girls in a girl gang, and we all rallied together at the rallies, and we would dress in wedding veils and wedding dresses and hang rainbow flags and stuff off our motorbikes, and we would tear through the city, like really making a racket, whilst everybody was tootering about doing their shopping and we were all trying to fight for our rights.
Yeah,
so cool. we really made a scene in that respect. And then I started working for VAC, Victorian AIDS Council, and at the time the plebiscite came along, they were like, oh, you're really good at activating people. Will you be our kind of representative for the campaign? And I was pretty honored to get that role, but also didn't know, what I was that's right. But you know, it's amazing what the community can pull together whenever we do, and keeping that energy up was really important. And you know, like even as things as small as making yes badges, you know, I think we produced about 40,000 badges in a couple of days. We had to go to like the outskirts of Melbourne to some random like backdoor Russian badge making shop that was the only place that actually physically sold badge makers. Like, it was a journey, it was an adventure. But you know, we gathered all the volunteers, we made heaps of badges, but we also, I convinced the CEO that it would be a good idea to paint the whole, wrap the whole building around with a rainbow mural and a big yes on the front of the building. And so we got David Lee Pereira, the mural artist, to come along, and he sort of laid out the design and helped us paint it, and then we had a whole bunch of volunteers come along, and it became this huge thing because it was right in the heart of South Yarra. I mean, people who were just allies, regular people,
non-LGBTQ,
non-queer people, yes, cisheads, you know, influencers, all sorts of people were coming to get their photo taken in front of the Yes Wall, and it really became a big thing, and it got lots of traction, and so we were just trying to get really creative at the time of ways of kind of getting right up in people's faces, and we made the news and stuff. So yeah, I think there was as much fun as there was sorrow at that time, you know. Everybody was really activated, and it was really great to be part of it.
I remember cutting my poor hand clawed at one stage because I had cut so many rainbow pieces of crepe paper to hang up from the ceiling of the workplace that I was in, and you know, all of the paraphernalia and, you know, creating of resources, and you know, I don't know a single LGBTIQ individual who didn't get involved in some capacity in, you know, community building. And you know, my partner now was organizing phone trees for folks to ring around their contacts to be like, what are you voting? Like, can you vote yes? Like, do you have any questions, et cetera, et cetera? So it sounds like both of you and, you know, everyone within the wider LGBTIQA plus community just drew on whatever skills and experiences and platforms you had to be able to, you know, get us towards the outcome that we had, which was, you know, a majority yes. So we'll hear more from you both in a second. We've just got to go to a song and a break, but we'll be right back. You're on Triple Bypass on Joy 94.9. You're back on Triple Bypass on Joy 94.9, where the bye babes take over the airwaves. I'm Amelia, and I've been chatting with Renee and Navo about their involvement in the Yes campaign for marriage equality in Australia. So, Nev, I was really interested to hear in how some of your activism and involvement in marriage equality campaigning, or as you said, campaigning against anti-transphobia and anti-trans sentiment, motivated you to become a marriage celibate. Like, what was that journey like for you?
Yeah, it's interesting, actually, because I don't think the marriage equality campaigns had anything to do with me becoming a celibate in some sense.
That's nice to hear.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think I would have become a celebrant had it not been for marriage equality. So there's obviously some relevance there. But I think doing a lot of public speaking work and sort of thinking about the sustainability and the future of the work that I want to do. And, you know, I spend so much of my time telling my lived experience and some of my traumas and experiences of transphobia in on stages and in workplaces around the country. And I was just thinking about what that will mean for me in the future, because I do get very drained by it, and it does feel a little bit sort of like how Hannah Gadsby speaks about sort of cauterizing your story at its trauma point and not allowing healing to occur. And I've been thinking about that quite a bit in the last few years, of how I can maintain myself through this work. And so I really felt like centering someone else's story would be a really beautiful thing to do.
I didn't know that. That's gorgeous.
Yeah, still being able to write and to be able to write something, because as an author, you know, I love writing, but it's writing in Australia is a pretty hard career path, and you can write the most beautiful of pieces, but if it doesn't sell well, or if it's just not the latest craze, people don't care. And so I just figured I could probably write anything and it will be the most beautiful, significant thing for someone, because it's on their special day, and getting to really share in those moments and actually meet and connect with people and hear their stories of love. Because also, like, I feel quite cynical about love. I was raised in broken families with couples that never were healthy or good for each other. I haven't really had heaps of healthy long-term relationships myself romantically, and so I guess I wanted to surround myself with possibility and believe in queer love again.
Yes, and have that energy come into your life.
Yeah, and I was thinking about all of the queer couples who are going to get married now, and how many of them might be misgendered by their celebrant, and how unpleasant that would be, or a celebrant who doesn't understand their kinky lifestyle or their polyamorous lifestyle, or just, you know, all the other little bits of our community that I think allies can pretend to get as much as they want, but they never really do.
Yeah, for sure.
And so I thought, you know, we need more trans celebrants. I don't really know of any at the moment.
You're the only one I know of.
Yeah, and so that's really important to me. But I think it was also, like, Mama Alto spoke at the Midsummer extravaganza in 2018, I believe, and she said something so beautiful that I just speak about all the time to explain my celebrancy, because she said, I cannot tell you how beautiful it is, after so many years of singing at funerals and protests, to now be singing at weddings.
Wow.
And I think that's really how I feel, is like, we've spent so much of our lives in protest and at funerals and in mourning and in resistance, and all of those things are so important, but I also just want to celebrate love and have those kind of lighter queer experiences as well.
Yes.
Yeah.
So celebrate when we actually have joy and have love and family and connection, and that's gorgeous. And
that's what sustains us through the rest, you know, through the resilience.
Oh, you're so right. What a beautiful quote by Mama. I'd never heard that, so thank you for sharing that.
Oh, my pleasure.
And what about you, Renee? I know for a fact that your campaigning through marriage equality really spurred you on to want to become a celebrant, even though it's not something you necessarily see for yourself. Tell us about that story.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's a few reasons. I used to really cringe every time I'd be at a wedding and hear the monotone being read out, and it says marriage is to be between a man and a woman to the exclusion of all others. And it used to make me feel sick. And I think a lot of celebrants didn't like to say it, and a lot of people didn't really want it to be said at their wedding, but by law it had to be said. So, you know, now that we do have marriage equality, the monotone now says marriage is to be between two people. And as simple as it is, you know, I always shed a little tear every time I say it, because it's really, it's those words are so powerful, and the change in those words are so powerful. Also, same as Nevo, I'm a real softie. I love love, and I think queer love is so beautiful. And to be part of people's happiest days of their lives, as if you wouldn't want to be part of that as a job, you know? Like,
exactly.
Like, it's wonderful. And also, yeah, I'm a really creative person. I love to perform. I love to write also. And to be able to, like, customize a ceremony to get to know a couple and understand, you know, about their love, and to help build something really beautiful for their day. It's art, you know, it's really special to be part of. And also, I wanted an excuse to get more femme tailored suits made. You know?
Oh, dear.
Loving that.
I wondered about that. I was going to ask about the outfits, because I know you're both very high fashion people.
Oh, yes. Well, I do.
Sorry.
Thanks. I was just going to say, I actually do give couples options on what I would wear as well, and they quite enjoy that. Yes. And recently I just married a couple dressed in a Snoopy suit.
Oh my God, what?
Yeah, I was dressed as Snoopy.
That is remarkable.
I know. I had to take the head off to do the actual ceremony part.
Oh my God.
But yeah, I couldn't read my script. But yeah, I was like, honestly, I'm here to, you know, really like break the paradigm.
Yeah. You're there for their day, right?
Yeah, that's right.
That's beautiful, Renee. What were you going to say next?
I was just going to say, yeah, giving couples an option is really important because I don't want to show them up either. Like it is their day, and I do have a floor-length rainbow sequined gown,
cape
sort of thing. So, yeah, it is important to check in with the couples because Renee and I are fashion icons of some kind, I think.
Seriously.
We don't fade into the background at all.
No, absolutely not. That's not our brand.
No.
This is a verified fact, listeners. Now, I love that. As a person who may get married in the future, I don't know yet what the future holds, but like I've always loved weddings, mainly as celebrations of love and, you know, celebrations of connection between people. And I'm actually getting fake married next weekend for my friend Delcy, who is...
Again?
Not again, Nev, because that's when true, you were happen. Doing your, sorry, listeners, when Nev was doing their training, but last year, was it last year?
Yeah.
Yeah, they asked me and my very, well, we weren't even together then.
You weren't together. No, it's because of me.
It is. Oh, shit. Well, so Nev had to do, and Renee, you can both, you know, talk our listeners through what this was like doing your fake weddings or your mock weddings. But Nev asked me and my then friend to be fake married for them. And so we planned this whole ceremony and this, that, the other. And there was a reason why it didn't work out in the end, but I was left at the altar. I was very upset.
No, I think actually it's a pretty valid reason. And I really respected Nevo for doing that and saying that, because I feel like the fake ceremony scenario that they give you, Nevo, I don't know if you want to talk about it, but I think it was very cool that you acknowledged that.
Yeah, I'd love to hear your perspective, Nev.
Basically, they did a case study in which they clarified the racial identity of both of the case study people, and one person was a person of color and one person was white, and they basically just said, like, get anyone to do it. And I was like, I'm not going to get anyone to do it, and I'm not going to get any person of color to play a Sri Lankan role, and it was really uncomfortable. And so I complained to them, and they were like, oh, we have never gotten a complaint in 30 years. And I was like, yeah, that's because most of your students are middle-aged white people who don't understand this stuff. And that was really reflected in the working with diverse people section as well. There are huge racial like inequalities and issues in this country. We are an incredibly racist country, and you know, built on the back of stolen land and genocide, and so I think that really bleeds through in so many of our courses and so many of the work that we do. And
it was really obvious
to me how white the course was, and also how heteronormative, and also how Christian. As a Jewish person becoming a civil celebrant, it was really obvious that civil celebrancy almost doesn't exist in this country. I mean, even the word solemnize is such a Christian word.
For
sure. That is not a word that was ever in my vocabulary. So, yeah, I mean, look, it wasn't like a valiant thing that needed, like, that happened. It just needed to be done. And I don't know if they would ever change anything, but I am actually working with a celebrant trainer at the moment to develop some better coursework for the professional development that they do.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so we've hired a few people, so I'm going to be doing LGBTIQA stuff with them, and my friend is going to be working on the anti-racism stuff, and I also have a friend doing the disability work as well, so hopefully
that's spectacular.
That will be better in future.
Well, just on the solemnize thing, I mean, it takes all of my being to not say sodomize. and also celebrancy and celibacy are two very similar words. Also, celibacy is not in my nature, but you know, people get them mixed up.
Oh, it's been so funny when I've told people I'm doing a celebrancy course and they think that I'm withholding from
which you may partake in from time to time.
I mean, only during a pandemic.
but just for fun, just because you can. Yeah.
Oh my God, I could have you folks on here for hours.
We're only getting started, and I'm sober.
Yeah, wait till we start teaming up on weddings. That's going to be next level.
Tag team weddings.
Oh my God. I can just picture what that could involve from a branding perspective.
I'm actually really excited to be invited to do a naked wedding, though. Like, really excited. Yes. So anyone who's listening, if you want a naked celebrant, call me.
Oh, I'd be keen for naked weddings too, hey.
Naked tag team wedding.
Yes. Oh my God.
Oh my gosh. We will be back with Renee and Nev just after this. We can hear more about the type of weddings they'd like to officiate. Just stay with us. You're on Triple Bypass on Joy 94.9. That was Finally by Cece Peniston, a personal wedding song favourite of mine. I'm Amelia and you're back on Triple Bypass, home of Joy's bisexual agenda. So we've just been hearing from Renee and Nev about what they've been looking forward to relating to officiating weddings. So both of them are quite interested in being a naked celebrant for naked weddings, as we heard before the break. What else are you both looking forward to about queer weddings?
Post-COVID.
Post-COVID, when we can have more than 10 humans.
Go ahead, Neva.
I'm really excited to marry some of my friends. I really love being able to say I can't wait to marry you and for that to be true. So I'm excited to just be a part of those really significant days for people. And it's funny because, before becoming a celebrant, I was a pretty whatever about marriage, and now I want all my friends to get married so that I can officiate their weddings. But I'm also really excited about other services as well. So like naming ceremonies for babies is something I would be really excited about. I love babies a lot and used to be a swimming teacher for them, but I'm also really excited to do gender reveal parties, but for trans folks. The only appropriate gender reveal parties, so when they come out and like actually help sort of facilitate a coming out, because I get a lot of young people asking me like, how can I come out and what's the best way to do it, and so I think it would be really nice to be someone who's maybe older or even just present to like help with that kind of process and make a party out of it.
Oh my God, that's really so gorgeous.
And so people can like fart things like colors out, like maybe the trans flag colors out or something like that. Is that like what it could look like? Because the whole phenomenon of gender reveal could really be like taken to another level.
Absolutely. And I make tiny cakes out of clay, out of polymer clay. And so I love to like make those cakes, but with trans flag or like a non-binary flag or a pansexual flag or something. And then it'll be a really tiny version and we'll cut into it and then reveal the flag that the young person I identifies with.
Oh, I love it. That's so good.
Oh my God. The scope of what you folks can do now that you're qualified.
Reappropriating terrible het culture.
That's my whole life's goal.
Oh, I love that. Well, I'm in a similar place to Nevo. Is like a lot of the weddings I have coming up are good friends and people I really care about. Two weddings that got cancelled earlier on in the year was one trip to America and one trip to Ireland. So I'm looking forward to hopefully being able to do those next year. But also, I think it just, what I love most about queer weddings is being able to encourage people to really go all out and really remove all of their preconceived ideas of what a wedding looks like, because all we have to say is two things in a wedding as celebrants. Everything else is up to you. You can literally take a shit on the stage and, it's your wedding.
You do what you like. You do what sparks joy for you.
Yeah, but, let's be real. People aren't going to do that. But I think that people just have these preconceived ideas that we've got to follow these traditions and religious ceremonies, and we don't have to at all, and we shouldn't.
And so folks who are potentially considering getting married, who are queer and who are a bit, I guess, allergic is not the right word, but it's the word I'll use. Allergic to that kind of traditional portrayal of this is how a wedding goes. Like, there's actually so much more freedom than people might anticipate there is in a wedding ceremony, and what that day and event can look like for them. Is that what I'm hearing, Renee?
Yes, but also if you have some religious background or religious family or other traditions, you can also incorporate those into the ceremony in different places. You know, you don't have to fully follow the structure, the traditional structures, which is really exciting and amazing. Yeah. And I'm sure Neva would probably have some experience with kind of Jewish ceremonies in that. And I'm sure it's really cool to be able to incorporate those different cultural things into an Australian wedding per se, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I did a wedding during COVID actually. So it was like a 20 people kind of wedding with some Jewish customs reimagined and sort of like modernized a little bit. And so it was really nice as well to research what some of the meanings are beyond the sort of traditional space for them. But yeah, I mean, I think what's also really interesting is how unapproachable the wedding industrial complex seems to people.
Yeah.
And I think that's where like Renee and my strengths lie, is that we're approachable and we're like the people that you would hang out with and
we're
friends. We're not just these like government bodies in this like huge wedding complex of white weddings and doves and tens of thousands of dollars spent. It's like we do things on a means basis.
Yeah.
We like want to meet people where they're at and we want to bring them the ceremony that they want. Like we don't want it to have to be this legal thing that they do on the side of the real ceremony, you know, and what I really enjoy is like getting to know a couple well enough that I can speak to their relationship as if I am a friend of theirs. And I think that's been really beautiful, seeing the couples reacting to the way I've perceived their relationship and getting to actually get to know them and learn and grow with them a little bit. And because it's significant for me as well, you know, it's not just a job. It's like a really special experience. And I feel so humbled and honored to be a part of those ceremonies. And it's really special to be able to do that. So if you are as well intimidated by what's involved in a wedding and how do I even begin and, you know, where are the services that I go to and whatever, it's like, this is what your celebrant is for. And there are some really great people at the moment doing this course so that we can do it as friends and as community.
Yeah, because you're both so involved in community building and event building in your respective areas of work or multiple areas of work, that it just makes sense that you do such a beautiful job of hearing and seeing the person and the people and understanding what it means to them to create a special event or day for them that's relevant and, I guess, full of what best represents them as people and as a couple.
Yeah, and I think for me, my experience as an event producer has been really useful in helping people to essentially produce their weddings because, you know, people have no experience in events, are trying to put on quite a large-scale event themselves. Mm. And, you know, in many circumstances with couples, I have kind of suggested things here and there. And I actually do a package where I bring the wedding to them, you know, everything from the signing table and chairs through to the arbor,
system,
you know, because a lot of the time, people don't really want to have to take on that sort of responsibility, or they've got busy lifestyles or big jobs, you know. And so there's a lot of things that as an event manager, I think that my brain works in that kind of default way. And it removes a lot of the stress on the day.
Yeah. And it must be nice to be able to have that, you know, not having to seek out potentially a whole range of different vendors and, you know, venues, and both of you having worked with lots of creative folks over the course of your careers and the work that you do means that you're able to be like, okay, well, if you're thinking of this, you could approach this person or this person or this person and have those kinds of queer networks.
And we all look after each other as well.
Exactly.
That's the thing, you know, other queer wedding vendors, photographers, cake makers, you know, we recommend each other because that's what we do. It's community.
Yeah, sure.
I think what's also really underestimated is how important it is to have someone at your wedding on the day who is calm. You know, because there's so much going on. It's such a significant event. And also people hate public speaking. So when you have someone like Renee or myself who have done so much public speaking and seeing, like, that's not the part that we're nervous about. And so,
exactly.
You know, when I did my wedding in COVID, like, I feel like the groom was my best mate. Like, he sort of turned to me and he was like, can I give you a hug? Like, I'm really nervous. And it was really nice to be able to hold that space for him because I was like, yeah, fair enough, you're nervous. I mean, I'm not, but also it's a very different experience for me than it is for you.
Yeah.
Oh, that's really sweet, Neva.
That is gorgeous. Oh, my God. I can't wait to hopefully attend some of the weddings that you folks are officiating in the future.
Hopefully.
Oh God, I hope so. Fingers
crossed.
You might
be too booked up with all your fake weddings, Amelia. Too busy being a bride, never the bridesmaid.
Well, always a fake bride, never a real bride.
Well, hopefully a certain mister's tuning in tonight, doll. Take the hint.
You'll have too many celebrants to choose from. You'll just avoid the whole thing.
Oh, my God. That is so real. Like, between Renee, Nev, and Del C, I'm just going to have to scissors paper rocket.
We'll do a tag team. We'll do a wrestling pit. There'll be oil. It'll be...
Oh, my God. This is the ceremony of my dreams.
It really has been a long lockdown for you, hasn't it, Nev?
No.
Whose wedding is this, Nev? Whose wedding is that? Oh, my God.
We can collaborate.
Look, there, no one said I can't have three celebrants. So.
No one said that.
No one. There's no rule. So, Renee, if folks are wanting to hear more about your business and follow you along your celebrancy journey, where can they do that?
The easiest place is just to head to my website, which is reneethecelebrant.com.au.
Awesome.
Everything's on there. Yeah. And for anyone within the community, LGBTIQ+ folks, I straight away offer mates rates, which is 30% discount, because I feel like our community deserve to get things for cheaper than everyone else.
That is bloody right. That's gorge. And Nev, what about you? If folks were wanting more information about your celebrancy services and all other officiating services as well, as you mentioned.
Yeah, I'm in the process of developing my website at the moment. So you can reach me on my email, which is nevozisandcelebrant@gmail.com. And you can also check out my general website, which is nevozisand.com.
Excellent. Awesome. All right, folks. Well, we have been joined by the amazing Renee and the amazing Nevo. Thank you both so much for your time. I'm so excited to see the joy and the love that you all share with the communities that you marry and conduct beautiful ceremonies for in the future. Thank you so much. Much for both of your time.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks for having us, doll. I'm looking forward to seeing you both in person soon.
Oh, very soon, I hope. Pleasures, treasures. See you soon.
Bye.
Bye.
We've wrapped up another episode of Triple Bypass, but we'll be back again next Tuesday to bring you more of the Bi+ agenda. Don't you worry. You can find every episode ever of Triple Bypass as a podcast on joy.org.au/triplebypass, on iTunes, Podbean, or wherever you get your podcasts. A big thank you to our podcasting team, Lou and Pete, who bring you our podcast every single week. If you know a friend who'd enjoy our show, let them know about us. That's what community is about, and sharing is super cute. You can also find us on our socials, Facebook Triple Bypass, Instagram Triple Bypass Joy, or you can email me, Ruby, or Alex anytime at triplebypass@joy.org.au. The Triple Bypass team will be back again next week to bring you all the Bi+ goodness you can handle. I'm Amelia, and this has been another Bi+ takeover from the team at Triple Bypass on Joy 94.9.